He batted a precisely aimed, thrown axe from the air with a flick of his hand and a word and drawled, "I got another one." Ebenezer McCoy extended his left hand, spoke another word, and darkness swirled from the shadows and condensed into a staff of dark, twisted wood, unmarked by any kind of carving whatsoever. The Black Staff.
"Fuego!"
shouted someone on the walls, and for a second I was hit with a little sting of insult. Someone was shouting fuego, and it wasn't me. While I was feeling irrational pique, guns started barking, and they aimed at me first. Bullets rang sharply as they hit my armor, rebounding from it and barely leaving a mark. It was like getting hit with small hailstones, uncomfortable but not really dangerous, unless one of them managed a headshot. Ebenezer turned toward the walls from which the soldiers were firing. Hits thumped into his robes but seemed to do little but stir the fabric and then fall at his feet. The old man said, mostly to himself,
"You took the wrong contract, boys."
Then he swept the black staff from left to right, murmured a word, and ripped the life from 100 men. They just died. There was absolutely nothing to mark their deaths. No sign of pain, no struggle, no convulsion of muscles, no reaction at all. One moment they were firing wildly down at us, and the next they simply dropped, dead. The old man turned to the other wall, and I saw two or three of the brighter soldiers throw their guns down and run. I don't know if they made it, but the old man swept the black staff through the air again, and the gunmen on that side of the field dropped dead where they stood. My godmother watched it happen and bounced and clapped her hands some more, as delighted as a child at the circus. I just stared for a second, shocked. Ebenezer had just shattered the first law of magic, "Thou shalt not kill." He had used magic to directly end the life of another human being, nearly 200 times. I mean, yes, I had known what his office allowed him to do, but there was a big difference between appreciating a fact and seeing that terrible truth in motion. The black staff itself pulsed and shimmered with shadowy power, and I got the sudden sense that the thing was alive, that it knew its purpose and wanted nothing more than to be used as often and as spectacularly as possible. I also saw veins of venomous black begin to ooze their way over the old man's hand, reaching up slowly, spreading to his wrist. He grimaced and held his left forearm with his right hand for a moment, then looked over his shoulder and said,
"All right."
The farthest gray figure, tall and lean, lifted his staff. I saw light gleam off of metal at one end of the staff, and then green lightning enfolded the length of wood as he thrust the metal end into the ground. He took the staff back, but the twisting length of green lightning stayed. He drove the staff down again about 6 feet away, and again lightning sheathed it. Then he removed the staff, reversed his grip on it, and with a sweep of his arm drew another shaft of lightning between the two upright columns of electricity, bridging the gap. He was opening a way. There was a flash of light, and the space between the bolts of lightning warped and went dark, then exploded with black figures bearing swords. For the first moment, I thought that they were wearing odd costumes or maybe weird armor. Their faces were shaped something like a crow's, complete with a long yellow beak. They were wearing clothes that seemed to be made from feathers, and then I got it. They actually were beak-faced creatures, covered in soft black feathers and carrying swords, each and every one of them a Japanese-style katana. They poured out of the gate by the score, by the hundreds, and began to bound forward with unnaturally long leaps that seemed only technically different from flying. They looked deadly and beautiful, all grace, speed, and perfection of motion. The wild light of the one-woman rave glittered off of their blades and glassy black eyes.
"The Kenku owe me a favor," Ebenezer drawled. "Seemed like a good time to call it in."
With sharp whistles and wails of fury, the strange creatures bounded up out of the ball court and began to engage the red court in numbers. It was too much to take in. Sorcery flew beside bullets on a larger scale than anything I'd ever seen. Stone weapons clashed against steel. Blood flew, the black of the vampires, the blue of the Kenku, and mostly flashes of scarlet mortal blood. There was too much terror and incongruous beauty in it, and I think my head reacted by tuning out everything that wasn't threatening my life or was more than a few yards away. "Maggie," I said. I grabbed the old man's shoulder. "I've got to get to her." He grimaced and nodded his head. "Where?" "The big temple," I said, pointing at the pyramid. "And about 400 meters north of the temple, there's a trailer cattle car," I said. "It was guarded the last time I looked. There are human prisoners still in it." Ebenezer grunted and nodded. "Get the girl. We'll take care of the Red Court and their lords." The old man spat on the ground, his eyes alight with excitement. "We'll see how the slimy bastards like eating what they've been dishing out." I gripped his hand hard, then put my other one on the old man's shoulder and said, "Thank you." His eyes welled up for an instant, but he only snorted and squeezed back. "Get your girl, hoss." The old man winked at me. I blinked a few times myself and then turned away. Time was running out. For Maggie. And for me.